I'm Dorianne Wheel. Welcome to Thrive with Dr. D.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dorianne Wheel, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Thrive with Dr. D. You're in the right place because this show is about you and about living your very best life. And in the service of this, I'm delighted to welcome my colleague and my special guest, Doug Kruger, who is very well known all over South Africa and, in fact, internationally, as a speaker and an eminent author. Doug, how many books have you written by now?
Dorianne, great to be joining you. We are number 8 coming out this year, although I have to qualify that. That's 7 with Penguin and 1 prior to. So there's a little bit of a kink in the numbers. But yeah, 8 in total.
Wow. Mm. And 2 of those books are exactly about, well, I think they're all really about thrival.
Yeah, but it's about your theme.
But thank you very much. But what we're talking about now is we're talking specifically in regard to the workplace. And I think it's quite hard. Sometimes when I talk about, is there a difference between personal and business? I think that that line is too hardly drawn in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Because who you are manifests as what you do.
Yeah.
People who feel good about themselves produce good results.
Of course.
So I think that the two are very much related. But we are talking today about being the very best in your industry, an icon in your industry. And are there really skills and strategies that could create people coming to you, thinking about you as the go-to person in the industry, the icon, bringing the money to you because that's where the business is. But the big question, of course, is how do you navigate that journey from having a vision, perhaps, a passion, to really making it happen? And I know that there was a lot in the past about the power of visualization and affirmation, not only in the past, in the present. And I think sometimes what that meant to people, as long as I can think it, as long as I can think it, as long as I can imagine it, one day I will wake up
and
being the person and suddenly.
Yeah.
And we know that it's not like
no,
that
absolutely.
At all. It's a journey. It's about that journey.
Yeah, we're interested in the mechanics of how you practically make that happen. This vast chasm between, exactly as you say, this picture that we have of ourselves, an idealized vision for the future, and the narrative in our head about what that will look like and feel like, versus how you practically get there. And that's really what I've been focusing on in my speaking and writing for about the last decade now. It's looking at these top experts and top performers in every industry and saying, how did they get there and what's different about them? Because in every industry, there will be hundreds, perhaps even globally, hundreds of thousands of people who do a certain thing. And then it begs questions like, is it the qualifications? Is it the personality? What are they doing differently? That's what I like to unpack.
And I would love to know that. And so would hundreds and thousands of people.
Absolutely. And our starting point is a bit of a disclaimer, which is to say, it's not necessary to work this hard. You and I are having a discussion about pinnacle performance, about being the top name, the top expert, and ultimately the icon in what you do. And Dr. D, you are that name at the end of the sentence. Who should we turn to about that? You have carved out such a niche in people's minds and in the popular consciousness. So it's looking at people like yourself and globally at people like, say, Arnold Schwarzenegger in bodybuilding and Richard Branson in business, Nigella in food, Oprah in TV, and saying, what did they practically do to get there? But
I
yes, right
know
up front.
What I have in common with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'm sure you're about
can
to.
Can I rather compare you to Nigella? I think we could have a more fun conversation there.
Sure.
You know, my wife and I both watch her show religiously, but for vastly different reasons.
She's amazing.
Oh, yeah. So let's start with her. That's a great starting point.
Okay.
You have to then ask the question, why Nigella? What makes her and a very small handful of her ilk stand out? We've got her, we've got, what are some of the other top names in that one? Jamie
Barefoot
Oliver.
Contessa.
Barefoot Contessa. Yeah, a handful of names all around the world. And when you look at the core skill there, we're talking about how to cook food. At least half of the human population, perhaps much more than that, has some degree of an idea how to cook food. So what differentiates these people? Nigella Lawson, is she the most technically qualified, the most technically gifted person in the world? And I think the answer to that is a fairly obvious no. However, she is very good at what she does, and that's sufficient. So what's interesting here is our starting point is to say you don't have to be the most academically qualified to be the top level expert or the top icon. You don't have to be the most academically qualified to be the highest remunerated. There's something else going on there, and that's what we're interested in. Now let's get into the practicalities of that. I believe that
that's reassuring, by the way.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, it opens up a lot of freedom to think about your life. Mm. You know, we get so hung up on this idea that you must have a university degree, you must pursue the, and you look at someone like Elon Musk. He literally carried out rocket science prior to getting any formal qualification in that space. Now, to be fair, he has since gotten a qualification, a doctorate in that area, but he started without it. And he famously said, you know, I don't have a degree from Harvard.
So is it fair to say that it helps, but it's not necessary?
Yes. Well, he says, I don't have a degree from Harvard, but the people who work for me do.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Love that.
So there's something else going on there. Right. What is that something else? I've come to believe after much study and trying to dissect and reverse engineer what goes into making these icons, that top experts exist at the intersection of three qualities, and we only ever really talk about and teach one of them. Now, the one that springs to mind is the most obvious one, and we're going to use the broad catch-all phrase knowledge. That stands for the technical competence, the ability, the academic knowledge, whatever the case might be. All of those things grouped together, we'll call them knowledge. Now, it's necessary, but not sufficient. You have to have a certain degree of qualification or at least credibility to enter into the game. However, the people that outperform even the high-level academically qualified ones add two more things. They are personality and publicity. That's what separates the Jeremy Clarksons and the Nigella Lawsons from the also-rans.
But how do you develop? Can you influence your personality, or is it something that you just are?
Yes, now that's a great question, because the first reaction that shy, reserved people will have to that idea, I put that up on a screen and I say, knowledge, personality, publicity. Half the audience shrinks in within themselves and goes, well, that's me out. And they disqualify themselves. Yeah. I don't have it. I'm not a Jeremy Clarkson. Yeah. I'm not a Richard Branson. I'm not a Donald Trump. I'm not a big, brash personality. And my immediate reaction to that is, well, hang on just a second. Not for one second am I saying that you should change or alter your personality. I am only suggesting you show it to the world. And if it's a quiet one, that's fine. Take Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver plays in the same space as Nigella Lawson. Mm. He has a fascinating accolade under his belt. He released a book just before Christmas one year, and it became the fastest selling nonfiction book in all of human history.
Wow.
Yeah. Now think about Jamie Oliver. This is a quiet, down-to-earth, bloke-next-door kind of guy. He is not a Jeremy Clarkson. Mm. But we know his face, we know his voice, we know his personality. So he has not done anything inauthentic. He hasn't tried to change himself. He's just shown himself to the world. That's what we mean by personality.
That's really interesting, because I think that you're highlighting the authenticity.
Absolutely. Clarkson really
than,
is like that.
You know, who you are, you're saying.
Yeah.
And what about people who are very reticent, or what obstacles do they experience in showing it to the world?
Well,
because
you know,
wouldn't the shy, retiring ones
not want
also
to do
not
that.
Want to do that?
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's a global thing and it's a human thing. Whenever they do surveys on our number one fears, it comes out as a joke that does the round. You know, public speaking tends to top the list and death comes second. And what that teaches us is that at your average funeral, most people would rather be the guy in the box. The one delivering the eulogy.
That's funny.
But now let's think about that from a strategic point of view. Firstly, well, that's pretty much everyone. We all fear standing up in public and being judged socially. It's a very deep-rooted, very common fear. And there's some degree of an interesting psychology when you look at that and you go, everyone's afraid of it. So what? We're all scared of doing that. And if 99% of people are terrified of speaking in public, speaking behind a microphone, of a group of people, being seen on TV, then the strategic advantage in doing so is just that much greater because most people simply won't.
So the need to make a difference and the need to be seen has to be such that you might even, we often talk about the man in the arena, but you always have critics in the arena.
Yes.
And one of the critics that is going to show up, whether you invite them or not, is perhaps these questions, the shame.
Yes.
Am I good enough?
Mm.
Am I offering something new? You know, what difference can I make?
Or worse than that, do people hate my guts? Because
sure,
it happens.
That's a bad one.
I mean, think about Jeremy Clarkson. He's one of the
But he doesn't care so much.
Exactly. He's one of the highest paid journalists in history, and certainly probably the highest in the motoring industry.
Yeah.
And he divides opinion neatly into half of the world thinks he's a motoring god. The other half want to burn him at the stake.
How do you not care that much?
Well, he is a bit of a unique one in the sense that I think he genuinely has a very thick skin. And I think it has, somewhere down the line, it has dawned on him that it doesn't matter. You know, most of us are at the sort of level of a fear reaction to public criticism that if we got even a dislike on a Facebook post, we'd be horrified.
Yeah.
We'd lose sleep over it. Here is a man who has had documentaries made about how much people hate him and he doesn't care.
Yeah, he capitalizes on it.
What I think he does is he realizes that the other half love what he does. And there's got to be some psychology going on there that says, I'm not for everyone. But I am for them, and I will be very much for them.
And I am for me and for my truth.
Yeah. And he does what he thinks. Here's an interesting little sort of side note on a Clarkson. You can be an abrasive personality like him, provided you very clearly love what you do.
Mm.
You think about some of the very abrasive, caustic personalities out there. If they didn't love what they did, they would be instantly disqualified from an industry. What helps Clarkson is that he may be abrasive, he may get under people's skin.
But he's damn good.
But he's damn good,
yeah.
And he loves what he does. And he takes it very seriously, even if his persona is over the top.
What about this thing of people warming to you? This is interesting and a little bit different.
Yeah.
When you show vulnerability.
Ah, yes. Okay. So let's start by saying, who are you really? Clarkson is not a vulnerable person.
Not
That's just
all.
Not him. But if you really are, if
but
you're
I think
a shy,
speakers
retiring,
are playing to this vulnerability business
yeah.
now, sharing quite a lot of their own personal
your stories.
And in that way, people resonating with the humanity in you,
yes.
the vulnerability in you, and saying, well, you know, I'm just like that.
Absolutely.
And that connects me.
Absolutely, and it helps to sell a message. There's a lot of research on the psychology behind this one. Steven Pinker, who's a cognitive psychologist, has a lot to say about this idea of relating to people, seeing the weakness, and so forth. And it amounts to something quite simple that we can use in our messaging as we speak to our potential target markets, which is that if they like you and if they trust you, without trying to, they will work harder to agree with the things you say. Mm. And the reverse is true as well. If they do not like you, if they inherently distrust you, without trying to, they will subconsciously work harder to pick holes in the things
and
that you say.
And you're saying, because I don't want to lose the essence of what you've said now, that if you're authentic and you allow yourself to be seen in whatever it is, that is going to result in people liking you more. Is that correct? Or not necessarily.
Yes, let's just draw a distinction
there.
What
is the thing, you know, when you sort of never have a second chance to make a first impression?
Let's draw a distinction between do you want broad sale approval? Do you want wholesale approval? And do you want everyone to like you? If so, fair enough. It probably means you're going to have to water down your stance on a lot of issues.
Yes, and compromise yourself.
Yes, and I actually recommend this one. Would you rather take a strong stance on the things that appeal to your tribe of followers, your group of people, at the risk of alienating the rest, at which point you say, that's okay, I'm not for them.
Right.
So you actually become a stronger flavor, which is potentially more divisive, but those who love you will love you more.
And this is what you're advocating.
That's what I'm advocating,
because
yeah.
I think that you can't be the icon.
And be
for
all things
everybody.
To all people. No, absolutely not.
You are the go-to person, you're the known name.
Yeah.
But that you might have not is connected with certain people along the way
Spot
in
on.
Order to get there.
I would personally rather go deep with a smaller tribe of people than to have just approval in general all around the world. That's just my take on it. Let's ask whether it's appropriate to be divisive on a certain thing. So let's say, for example, there's been a big scandal in the States over the last couple of years with this idea of sports stars kneeling in front of the US flag
right.
as a social protest. Now, I don't care one way or the other about the ideology of it, but let's look at it from the perspective of being an expert or the leader of a tribe of followers. If you are a contentious political commentator, then that sort of thing is perfect for you. But as a sports star, most of what your fans want out of you is escapism. Mm. So it's quite possibly the worst thing that you can do from a strategic point of view.
Maybe these people will feel, you know, what are you doing?
You're breaking something that's precious to me. Yeah. So I would draw the line here. I would say take a strong stand on issues that are germane and intrinsic to your world. But talking about general issues outside of that, and it's only going to divide for no particular good reason, maybe don't
touch. What about the saying, what people think of me is none of my business?
I like that very much. Although, having said that, we are talking about building up what is essentially a monetizable reputation. Mm. So in this sense, we do have to have a thick skin, but we must care about what reputation we're building.
Okay, so it's a focused reputation with people who are going to either be your clients or your customers.
Or your tribes of followers,
as
Malcolm Gladwell might have put it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what are we trying to do here? We're saying I want to become the recognizable name in a certain sphere. That's the goal of expert positioning. It's saying whenever the large deals are doing the rounds, when people are spending into this industry, when they need a guest speaker, when they need a star, you should be the name. At the end of the sentence, you know who you should speak to about that.
Right.
It's becoming the first name that springs to mind.
Okay. And what you've said in order to get there so far is you've said you have to have a certain amount of credibility.
Yeah.
You have to have a certain amount of knowledge.
Personality.
Some of it relates to a qualification, but not necessarily. And your personality do not be daunted if it's not the most outgoing.
If you are vulnerable, show your vulnerability.
Show,
be authentic,
but
be you out loud.
And allow yourself to be seen for who you are.
Yeah.
Okay, you said something else. I know the last one was publicity.
Yes.
Okay, in terms of the personality part, we've spoken a lot of how you be who you are and not kind of pander to the whole market, be more focused and so on. All right. Do people are they excited about that message because it gives them permission to not have to say, well, as you said in the beginning, it's not me, I'm me, and it's okay.
Yes, yes, it's liberating in a
liberating
sense. But it also comes with a massive obligation. It's saying, if you've been focusing only on the technical side of things, well, that's one in three. There's much more that you need to do. But at the same time, you know, occasionally you sort of have these moments where the penny drops and the lights go on for people. And it's a wonderful experience. I was delivering the talk on how to be a top expert for a business school that constantly plays for second and third place to the school that comes out on top every year in the ratings and rankings. And afterwards, the marketing manager came to me and said, you know, I've been worrying about something for years. And he says, the penny dropped for me today. He says, you know, we have the same textbooks, we have the same courses. Sometimes we are cheaper than our opposition. And every year they come out on top. Mm. And he gave me this wonderful little phrase that sums up the whole dynamic. He said, you know what it is? The difference is in the dean. And I love the alliteration of that. The difference is in the dean.
Mm.
He says, what's happening here is the dean of their school is this outspoken, loud, vivacious person who's always seen in front of cameras, always out there in the media, an active thought leader causing waves and creating tribes of followers.
Mm.
He says, by contrast, our dean is a shy, retiring person who doesn't want anything to do with the public world. And he says, that is losing business for us, and it's losing money and rankings.
And did he kind of just realize that as a result of
because
listening
Because he was
to
looking at it in terms of cost. He was saying, well, if our pricing is less and we're offering the same thing, what's the difference? It had never occurred to him that the difference might be personality, a human
and publicity.
Being.
Yes. This leads on to the publicity.
Absolutely. There was something perceived to be vital about the opposition. And that's where you enter your Bransons of business and so on. This person who becomes the rock star of that organization or that industry. Now, we must just add to that, that's a double-edged sword. Because if something goes wrong and that person falls from grace, it can reflect badly on the entire brand and the entire organization. So we are playing with a very powerful tool here, which can come back and bite us as well.
Well, I think that it's fair to say, shout me down if you don't, that it really starts with a leader like that.
Mm.
I mean, if you look at Richard Branson, he's built the Virgin brand, whatever, which I think would still be sustainable. It would be sad because he is so associated with it, but it would still be sustainable. So it was through who he was and his own name that the brand really developed
around
him.
And he's very fortunately avoided big scale scandals.
Yeah.
He hasn't imploded.
So that sort of leads to the third thing that you said was the publicity.
Yeah.
And I mean, reputational management is so important now. And in fact, there are companies who will take you on to manage your reputation.
Yes.
Recognizing how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing the destructive element of even a thought of a huge scandal.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes the big apology does more damage than good. If, for example, you are fighting something contentious and you take a strong stand, I would argue that an apology afterwards is the worst thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different to an immorality situation or a crime scenario, at which point, you know, you've been caught with your hand in the cookie jar. You cannot not apologize.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, different types of implosion and different types of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay, so let's just, perhaps if you want to, you've spoken about Branson. I mean, he wasn't born into any kind of family where there was publicity or whatever.
Yeah.
He, I think, is a particular character that started taking risks and chances.
Yes.
From the time that he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
I remember part of his mother was brave enough to say, okay, I'm going to leave you in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Which would be very unusual. Find your own way back.
Yeah.
And that brings up the whole thing of, perhaps just looking at whether these kind of things that are necessary to come together come through support, come through opportunity that may be given to you, or come much more from hardship.
Or a love of risk-taking and so forth, yeah. And of course, everyone's journey is going to be different, but let's pick up on Richard Branson there. At his core, there is a desire to stand out rather than fit in.
Mm.
And that really is the heart and soul of what we're discussing today. You know, when you speak to new or young entrepreneurs or people starting up a business for the first time, if you speak to them for more than 5 minutes, you will very quickly discern that their heart's desire is to fit in and look like a credible part of the industry. Mm. In many ways, it's the worst thing that you could do. You know, Tetris teaches us that if you fit in, you disappear.
Mm.
What we want is to stand out by design. Now, that takes a great deal more courage. And that's something that seemed to come very naturally to Branson. He said, well, our image is we are the rock and roll airline. He started off, of course, selling rock and roll records.
Mm.
And then it was we're the rock and roll airline and so on from there. And he has always had this desire to stand out rather than fit in.
I mean, he has had that from the very beginning. But
yeah.
If we're talking about most of us, the desire to be liked, respected, fit in, and so on, is how you start off usually,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Mm.
And then how does that kind of develop and change? Can it develop and change with confidence?
I would say so. And I think the first thing is being conscious of the dynamic. If you are unaware of it, you may spend your entire career trying to fit into an industry. Along comes, hopefully, someone like myself and says, well, hang on a second, is that a good idea? Question it consciously. And in a best case scenario, people reading that in a book, in an article, or hearing it in a speech, will actually stop for a second and say, you know what, there's something to be thought about there.
Mm.
I have always, even if unconsciously, just tried to look the same and to fit in.
Mm.
What if I did explore this idea?
Mm.
Now, it may be a difficult and a challenging idea to explore. It may not come naturally to you to go, all right, I'm going to put on the bicycle jacket and I'm going to jump out of an airplane, be the rock and roll guy.
Mm.
You don't necessarily have to be that much of a maverick, but you do need to look at your scenario and go, what could I do if I buy into this idea of standing out rather than fitting in?
Is it about, because I have to say this relates to a conversation that I had with my son last night.
Mm.
And he was talking about his purpose and his direction. Because at the moment he's slogging through a degree that he's not really enjoying.
Right.
He's kind of seeing it perhaps as a means to an end. But what he's grappling with right now is he's saying, I have to, what I'm wanting is to see a need or to see a gap,
mm,
or to see something. He has an entrepreneurial spirit,
uh-huh,
which may manifest eventually,
yes,
after this very long degree.
Yeah.
Now, I think it will. But he was saying, how do you find that gap which allows you to take risks, mm, and be different?
Yeah.
You know, what do you do to identify that?
You know, it ties us into a fascinating expert in the States by the name of Mike Rowe. And Mike Rowe used to have a show called Dirty Jobs. And basically what he did was he went around all of the places around the U.S. where people were doing literally dirty jobs, cleaning out pig pens and mucking up things and working with the oil in machinery and so on. And he eventually came to this interesting conclusion, and he now speaks on this idea that a lot of the wealthiest and happiest people in the United States do not have academic degrees and do these dirty jobs. Now, I just want to be very cautious there and say I'm not telling your son to stop with his degree. I got one, even though it's not wasn't based on what I do. It was very good to have. However, it's interesting to note that a lot of the time, the entrepreneurial opportunities are out there, but we're chasing the academic side of things instead. And there is always a balancing, weighing up of time spent chasing the degree versus opportunity. Mm. Let's take, for example, if you wanted to become a cartoonist and you wanted to be more famous than, say, Jim Davies of Garfield, Bill Watterson, who did Calvin and Hobbes, or Charles Schulz, who did Peanuts. And sideline note, Charles Schulz is listed by Forbes as the third richest posthumous celebrity. So there's money in cartooning. Let's just chuck that in there for a second. It's a real career. You could go and do, say, a 4 or 5 year college or varsity degree in art, or you could get started with your with your comic strip. And if you say that, you know, we maybe have, say, 40 to 50 years worth of working career, and it's going to take you 4 or 5 years to do a college degree. Well, gosh, that's about 10% of your working life right there. Mm. You could actually be doing that rather than chasing the qualification.
So I think what you're saying is that perhaps these skills that you're talking about are much more to do with flexibility and adaptability.
Mm. Yes.
To do with risk-taking.
Yeah.
Maybe resilience, getting up if you've fallen.
Absolutely.
I think that what you're talking about are interpersonal skills.
Yes.
You've also been talking a little bit about intrapersonal skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, recognizing certain things inside you.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, dealing with them.
Yes.
You know, and
questioning
so,
beliefs that you've inherited.
And we've had a lot of sort of emphasis more on the one side, and you're saying perhaps we need to stop and rethink. You have found threads of similarity,
yes,
between all of these people
top performing
in huge
icons.
Huge different roles,
yeah,
and this is what we're talking about now. What do they do, who they are?
Yeah,
you know, they whatever they allow themselves to be seen, they've got a certain amount of knowledge, they're a bit maverick.
Yeah. Can I give you the biggest one, which funny enough we actually haven't touched on yet? Let's tie two ideas together.
Okay.
Here. Okay, so there's one quality intrinsic that we haven't actually mentioned,
right?
Yet, and let's tie that to the publicity thing. The quality is that of simple push, what you would call drive. When you start studying these individuals, and I've had the same theme come up in a book on personal wealth with self-made millionaires and billionaires, probably the primary quality is the degree of push and drive that these individuals had. They do not wait for permission. They do not necessarily wait for coaching. They don't wait for anything. They are pushing relentlessly in a direction they've identified. Quick practical example, Arnold Schwarzenegger gets to the age of 21. He's in Austria. He wants to become the best bodybuilder in the world. That was his goal. And moved to California because that was where the energy was. At the age of 21. Gee. Most of us at 21 are going, well, I'm kind of doing a degree because I don't know what else to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's that drive, that push, that all-out go. Now, let's tie that into the media and the publicity side of things. The passive way of doing it is simply to react when it comes to you. It will come to you the higher the levels at which you perform because you become conspicuous, you become impressive. But I believe that for the top-level experts, they are actually going out and generating it by design.
Oh.
Now, that can be on the very simplest level. You send a proposal article to the Star newspaper Citizen saying, here's something I can write about, may I send you a little article? They say yes and you get it in. It goes to higher levels where you contact someone who's running a radio show, a talk show like yourself. You say, here's what I specialize in. Would you like an interview? But at the highest level of that one, you have your own internationally syndicated show on the topic. You are Jamie Oliver with his show. You are Nigella Lawson with her show. And you are driving the media publicity rather than waiting for it.
So in fact, what you're saying is that you've got to step in to the fourth revolution.
You've got to push and bang your own drum. And most people don't like doing that.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, if I just talk about myself, I don't mind doing that. Some I've learned that I can do that. Where my deficit is that feeling comfortable, not personally so much because of that, but with technology and the social media. And how do you do it? And can I hire somebody?
Oh, I've got such a great answer for that one. And I must say, I struggle with this because it's so easy to love and be comfortable with the old way of doing things. And here's something that I use as an example for this one. And like I say, this is challenging to me as well. I'm very much almost sort of a purist in how I go about things. So David Attenborough, The voice you hear in all of the nature documentaries. I mean, every time you've ever seen penguins walking across the ice,
you hear the voice.
You've heard his voice, I guess. And the male approaches the female across the tundra. You know, it's always him. I was listening to an old radio comedy the other day, The Goon Show, and
I love it.
It's bizarre humor, but it's fantastic. And they referenced something about something to do with the world of animals, and they said, "Quick, call David Attenborough."
Yeah.
And it jumped out at me, and I went, "What year was this broadcast?" And I went and had a look, and it blew my mind. I'm actually goosebumps now 50, as I say this.
60.
55. 1955. Mm. They referenced him as the expert and icon.
And he still is.
He still is. Yeah. It's over 70 years later. Mm. I mean, I had to look up the guy's age. He's in his 90s, so it does actually work. But it was mind-blowing to me. So
and
anyway,
that's because of?
So imagine if in the 60s, so David Attenborough had said, "Well, I do this sort of thing on the radio, only I don't want to learn about this newfangled television technology," but he didn't. Imagine if in the 70s he'd said, "Well, you know, the technology I'd been using in the 60s, I'm familiar with it, I'm comfortable," but he didn't. And he kept on updating his relevance through technology all the way through to where we are now, 70 years of career later. Now, here's what's interesting in terms of principle. He does the same thing. He is a theme traveling through time. It is only the technology that has changed around him. To the extent that he's now using underwater submersible cameras and HD drones and satellites, but it's the same thing. Mm. So it's an interesting lesson in thinking about relevance. He does not find threat in the new technology. He only sees himself as a theme traveling through time, and the tech simply updates around him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's really fascinating.
It's interesting,
Doug,
isn't it?
Thank you very, very much. If you had to sum up and say, okay, we're talking about being the name that absolutely pops up in your industry, being the go-to expert and having all the good things like money and recognition and so on following that.
Yeah.
You've highlighted some really important things. You've challenged some important ideas about the kind of qualifications and knowledge you have to have. You know, you've said not necessarily it's important to have knowledge, but not necessarily
sufficient.
And I think I love the idea that you can be who you are.
Yeah.
I think that's tremendously
encouraging
and
reassuring. And you only have to teach your guide at the level that you've accomplished. You don't have to claim to be a global expert. If your knowledge is only at yay level, you teach people
and
who are not there
market.
Yet. That's it.
Yeah. And
simple.
To choose your market and just know from the beginning that at times you're going to be kicked.
Yeah.
And that might be from people who don't, you know, who don't really understand what you're doing and who you don't want. Mm. To be with you,
you're
kind of talking
everyone.
About a niche focus, you know, and then I think that you're talking about lots of other skills about resilience, courage, being able to take the risk, being flexible and adaptable, standing out.
It's the highest level of you and it's difficult.
The highest level of you, the thrival of you.
Yes, the thrival
Love
of you.
Love that.
Yeah.
One more comment just before we close. A lot of that seems to me to depend on the vision that you have.
Yeah.
The purpose that you have, can you give any
suggestion
of how
answer for
to
that
find
one.
That?
Okay, so Time Magazine interviewed Nigella Lawson and they say, "Where did you start? What got this going for you?" And in this moment of candid honesty, she said, "You know, when I was about 16, I had this mental image of," and what she described as, "the Italian goddess." And she said, "To me, that was just this wonderful, romantic, idealized vision of who I wanted to be." And when you look at her show, it's that realized out loud. And I have seen this little idea. It's only hinted at because it's almost embarrassing to admit. I have seen it in all the top icons. It starts with this incredibly innate human thing that looks at someone else or looks at a dream and goes, "I want to be like that." Yes. Mm. So that's what we want. You don't necessarily have to have the whole business plan. You've got to go, what's the best version of me? What do I yearn for? And if you can show your followers who are also yearning for that, how to be that, then you're on the right track.
Sure. Fantastic, Doug. Really a great pleasure to have you.
Always
and
a joy
to
chatting
listen
with you.
To you. But I don't know if anyone's ever told you before what a great voice you have.
Oh, thank you very much. Leans into microphone. Hope's voice doesn't crack.
Really fantastic. And thank you for being with us on Thrive with Dr. D.
I'm Dorianne Wheel. Thanks for listening to Thrive with Dr. D, a Jackpod podcast.